Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases the stories and radio productions from this and many other community stations across the country. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement of Media Minutes in Northampton, Massachusetts. Today on Sprouts, we focus on the arrests of journalists during the 2008 Republican National Convention in St. Paul, Minnesota.
I went up to the riot police line. I said, I'd like to talk to a commanding officer. This is all videotaped. And they took me, handcuffed me immediately, said, you're under arrest. They pushed me to the ground. I said, you can clearly see I have all the proper credentials. I have my security clearance for the floor, for example, of the convention. So Secret Service came over and they pulled it off. Now you don't. They said.
And the assumption is that if you're a journalist, you know, from the police, that you're supposed to disperse. Well, if you disperse when they tell you to, then you're not covering the story. The journalists really are supposed to stay there at that time.
They confiscated our cameras. They confiscated our notes. They confiscated our computers. What they took away is our ability to report.
American national political conventions have long been known for wacky party hats, a multitude of political buttons, showers of confetti, and long-winded speeches inside the convention centers. Outside those walls, in the streets of the host cities, both the Democratic and Republican national conventions are symbols of political unrest and police crackdowns, and increasingly, a militarized system of silencing voices of demonstrators and journalists covering the stories that happen in those streets. This system includes police in full riot gear with no visible identification at nonviolent events, surrounding entire groups of people, leaving them no way out, mass arrests, including journalists, confiscating cameras, recorders, and field notes. Although pepper spray has been used in the police arsenal for years, prolific use of concussion bombs, rubber bullets, and tasers are now placing the public at greater risk for personal injury and police abuse.
In Denver, the opening day of the Democratic National Convention on August 25th saw 100 protesters arrested. Police say demonstrators charged the police line after being instructed to disperse. A man named Jacob with Denver Cop Watch was seen on Democracy Now! With riot police walking behind him.
If you look behind me at all these sheriffs, there is not one of them identifiable. These guys could hurt us at any given time, and we would not know how to hold them accountable. We can't identify these guys. These guys are operating with a complete impunity.
At least one journalist was arrested at the DNC. ABC News producer Asa Eslocker was taking pictures of Democratic senators and VIP donors leaving a private meeting at the Brown Palace Hotel. He was on a public sidewalk. The Republican National Convention in St. Paul, Minnesota, took place the first week of September. More than 800 individuals were swept up on a variety of charges related to protests of the event, the vast majority of them participating in peaceful demonstrations. But the arrests started before the convention even began.
In a series of coordinated searches led by Ramsey County Sheriff Bob Fletcher, St. Paul police raided more than half a dozen locations in preemptive strikes against groups planning to protest the RNC. Among those targeted was a group called Eyewitness Video. During the 2004 RNC in New York, Eyewitness recorded incidents of police misconduct. Out of 1,800 arrests, more than 400 were overturned based on video evidence contradicting sworn statements by police officers. A house Eyewitness members were staying in before this year's convention was surrounded on Saturday afternoon, 2 days before the convention began, after they refused to let officers in without a warrant. Eyewitness founder Eileen Clancy was in the house waiting with the rest of the group.
As we try to come up with a way to resolve these problems with the police, you know, excessiveness, here we are right in the middle of it. Like, we couldn't avoid stepping on the line, you know. I mean, they're coming for us. You know, we've challenged them, we've been really successful, and now they're coming for us.
Although the warrant was written for the apartment next door, armed police broke in through the attic.
What should we do?
We can lock this door. We can lock this door.
Okay. Yeah.
Come on, hold your hands up.
Clancy spoke to reporters as she was handcuffed. The Glass Bead Collective recorded the moment.
If they arrested us, they'd have to swear out a complaint against us. And there's nothing that they could prove. They've been detaining people they photograph them, they look through your materials, they copy your materials, and don't return them to you, and then you're merely detained. So you don't have the same situation where you have a police officer swearing out an affidavit, which we could prove was false. This seems to be a new technique. It sort of looks softer, because maybe they will release us, but even so, we've been prevented from working here for hours today. We don't really know who's in charge. How are we going to put blame on this? And actually, if you file a lawsuit, they'll say, well, you were just held for a little while. It's sort of no big deal. So I guess it shows that you can use knowledge, you can use information, you can try to tell the truth, but brute force prevails.
Later in the week, eyewitness video was targeted again when St. Paul police entered a building housing the collective's offices, claiming to be investigating a possible kidnapping and hostage situation. The police were armed with batons and a battering ram.
Once the convention began September 1st, more than 50 journalists were swept up in mass arrests with protesters and bystanders, with some being detained for several hours to several days and having their equipment confiscated. Journalists represented both mainstream outlets like the Associated Press and the local NBC affiliate, as well as the national radio and TV show Democracy Now! And Minneapolis-based citizen videographers from The Uptake. Some were roughed up by police. Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman, Sharif Abdel Qaddous, and Nicole Salazar were among those arrested. Salazar filmed her own arrest.
I was telling them that I'm press, please let me pass. And instead of, you know, letting me pass and following the crowd, they instead came right after me and slammed me into the car, at which point I think my camera came back and hit me in the face, and two cops were also behind me. And they pushed me through that row of cars into the next area of the parking lot and slammed me to the ground and said, get your face on the ground. And one of the officers, I think he was trying to drag me, he was grabbing my leg. And another officer put his boot on my back and was pressing me to the ground.
With her press credentials around her neck, Amy Goodman was arrested a short time later when she tried to get information about Salazar and Qaddous. More arrests took place on the final day of the convention when police herded a group of protesters and journalists onto the Marion Street Bridge in St. Paul. Among them was Lambert Rochefort, a filmmaker from Pepper Spray Productions.
When we got to the end of this road where this bridge was that we were planning to cross, there was just a big line of riot cops there. And pretty much as soon as we got there, the cops started shooting tear gas and rubber bullets at the crowd and throwing concussion grenades and like smoke bombs and stuff. And then they just started, you know, attacking the protesters and everybody else who was there, other media people and stuff, chased us down to this park. And then basically as soon as we got to the park, the police just totally surrounded everybody and said everybody was under arrest and to, like, sit down and put our hands above our heads. And I continued to film throughout that. Like, I was filming people being arrested.
Rochefort, who was also arrested during the 2004 RNC, says that independent journalists aren't taken as seriously as mainstream journalists and are seen as more of a threat.
Journalists who are independent, who aren't, like, you know, affiliated with a big, like, corporate news outlet, and who are choosing to cover things that the state would rather not get media attention, such as, you know, protests, it tend to be targeted by the police because they see us as a threat to their ideology. I mean, we're putting out media that's contrary to what they want people to know about and believe.
But mainstream journalists were also arrested. Ben Garvin is a videographer-photographer for St. Paul's own Pioneer Press, who was swept up alongside Rochefort.
There were some peaceful protests starting out at the state capitol. You could just get a sense that they wanted to make it to the convention center, the Excel Center, where the convention was being held. And there was word from the police that that was not going to happen tonight. They were going to block all, you know, paths. They weren't going to get down there. And so there was a sense there was going to be an inevitable confrontation. And so a number of us media folks were just kind of following and recording any confrontations with police, and also just peaceful protest.
Garvin says at one point, as police were directing people to go to the bridge, he could have made the decision to stop reporting.
I do admit, if I had not wanted to be on the bridge, I probably could have avoided it. I got a sense early that was their strategy. They were going to trap everyone on the bridge and arrest them. And I felt like that was the story. You know, that's what the media was there for, is to see what was going to happen that night. So to not be on the bridge would be, in some sense, to not do my job.
Garvin was handcuffed for 45 minutes, and he had to hang around for another couple of hours to be processed. He was cited for unlawful assembly.
And I was surprised they did that. I was clearly Pioneer Press photographer, a local photographer. They knew me because I work in town. I had credentials on and I had this big fancy camera. And there is still this sense of like, you know, you're just like everybody else. Sit down here and shut up.
All charges against him were dropped. Garvin thinks the police began to view the press as antagonizers who drive protesters to more intense action.
The media does have a role in capturing the event and at the same time, you know, spurring it on. I think that protesters get excited when they see a million cameras around. And so I think that's true, that we do add to it. But I don't think that necessarily means that we have to be arrested. I think, you know, it's just the nature of the situation.
We're all going to die by firing squad? What?
We're on the bridge!
Jason Barnett of The Uptake said those reporting on an event should not be arrested for unlawful assembly.
The police would say, disperse, and you have 10 minutes to disperse or whatever. And the assumption is that if you're a journalist, you know, from the police, that you're supposed to disperse. Well, if you disperse when they tell you to, then you're not covering the story. The journalists really are supposed to stay there at that time.
Geraldine Cahill of The Real News was arrested with her videographer. She was also charged with unlawful assembly.
One officer told me while I was sitting on the bridge that the media can embed themselves with police and not get into trouble. Does this sound familiar? So much for the Fourth Estate.
Journalists also reported to having their equipment taken during the arrests. Some, like Garvin of the Pioneer Press, had their equipment returned immediately. Others were not as fortunate. Teresa Nelson of the Minnesota chapter of the ACLU says that many who were arrested did not have their news-gathering equipment returned until after the event was over.
Any journalist who had a camera or other equipment, cell phones, you know, any of that stuff was taken by St. Paul police, and they kept it until the soonest they released things was the following Monday after the convention, so Monday, September 8th. So, for example, we helped a group of, it was two photojournalism students and their advisor from the University of Kentucky. They were arrested on Monday, September 1st. They were held for 36 hours, actually a little more than 36 hours. They were released on Wednesday, but all of their equipment was held until the following Monday. So on Wednesday, Wednesday and Thursday, they found themselves in a situation where they're in St. Paul. They're completely stranded. They had no money, no IDs, nowhere to stay, and there was no way that they could continue to do their job. And there were, any other journalist who was arrested faced that same problem.
The treatment of journalists during the RNC sparked a national public outcry. On September 4th, journalists and citizens of St. Paul gathered at St. Paul's City Hall to demand that all charges be dropped for all journalists arrested while covering the RNC. Nancy Doyle Brown of the Twin Cities Media Alliance led the group that delivered more than 50,000 letters collected by nonpartisan media reform group Free Press.
The group that's assembled here today represents Twin Cities journalists, independent media makers, and others who care deeply about press freedom. We have brought with us the support of more than 50,000 Americans to deliver St. Paul Mayor Chris Coleman a message. Mayor Coleman, journalism is not a crime.
Their call was echoed by groups including the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press, Reporters Without Borders, the National Association of Black Journalists, the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, and the ACLU. On September 19th, most of the charges were dropped, including those against Democracy Now! Producers and Pepper Spray Productions. You're listening to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program produced by this community station and many others across the country. But questions still remained. Why had journalists been swept up in the first place? And how can St. Paul and other cities across the country ensure that this situation never happens again? The Minnesota chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists held a town meeting on September 22nd to wrestle with those questions. On the panel were city officials and local journalists. Brown said that part of the discussion was focused on whether or not journalists were committing unlawful acts.
Some of the people at the Society of Professional Journalists said, no journalists should have been arrested because they were, they are not above the law. But again, as we've been talking about, that assumes that they are part of the assembly, you know, and not just an observer of it. They're in physical proximity to the protest because they're covering it. But they are not part of the protest. They have not come out to exercise their freedom of speech or freedom of assembly themselves. They are just documenting the people who are.
Local AP Bureau Chief David Pyle pointed out how the police used a photograph taken by AP photographer Matt Rourke, who was arrested on the first day of the convention.
I also wanted to point out one thing that happened with regard to Matt Rourke, who was on Monday held for 10 hours, and on Thursday, his photo of the alleged anarchist breaking the window at Macy's was picked up by the St. Paul police and made part of a public plea to help us identify this person breaking the glass.
So your point is, if it's useful to have the photograph,
exactly,
why are we arresting them?
Right.
And Mulholland, deputy mayor of the city of St. Paul, claimed that journalists absolutely have a special role as it relates to the First Amendment. But this distinction raises the question of whether or not journalists should receive special treatment in what she termed a public safety incident.
There is a very special role for the media to play, and that it is our jobs as public officials to assure that members of the media have access and have all the information they need to tell the story. Having watched many hours of video, both from YouTube, from TV stations, read many articles, I am hard-pressed to think that we didn't give great access to the media during the course of the convention. That certainly was a goal. Yes, I think there's a special, we pay special attention.
But Mulholland's perspective that the media got great access during the convention was challenged by media activists and journalists. Brown pointed out that while journalists are in handcuffs, stories aren't being told.
There are all these stories that weren't told because journalists were in handcuffs, and we know that's not right. And there's international organizations. We are now 48th on the Press Freedom Index that International Reporters Without Borders does. And this is exactly the kind of thing that docks a country on the Press Freedom Index, is when there's this kind of treatment of journalists. So we need to solve this problem.
So do journalists have any special privileges under the law that protects them from arrest while gathering news and information? Lucy Doglish, Executive Director of the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press.
No, not at all. None. Journalists have no more rights or no less rights than any citizen who attends a protest. There is no First Amendment-based right to cross a police line. There is no First Amendment-based right to gather news. There is a First Amendment-based right to publish the news once you have the news. Once you get it, you can publish it. But there is no First Amendment protection under the law whatsoever that gives a photographer or reporter at the site of a protest a greater right to be there than a protester. So what we always tell journalists and photographers, including photographers, is that if they are at a protest and the police say disperse or be arrested, they must disperse or be arrested. Now, that does not mean that the order to disperse or the arrest was ultimately lawful, but you do not have a First Amendment right to ignore an order from the police.
ACLU's Nelson says that documenting an event can be viewed as a lawful purpose.
The First Amendment does protect the freedom of the press, and there's not a whole lot of case law that really differentiates a credentialed news media person versus the average citizen in terms of their First Amendment rights. But, for example, when you look at the statutes that reporters and journalists were charged under in Minnesota, there's a few things that are important to understand. the majority of people who were arrested on the fourth day of the convention were charged with presence at an unlawful assembly. And this partly illustrates how broad the statute is, but basically it says whoever without lawful purpose is present at the place of an unlawful assembly and refuses to leave is guilty of a misdemeanor. Now, there is this without lawful purpose language in the statute, which to me means that somebody who is there documenting, exercising their right to freedom of the press has a lawful purpose and should not be swept up in arrests for unlawful assembly.
Many define journalists to be those reporters working for the mainstream press. But there are many others who believe that the boundaries of journalism need to expand in order to keep the public more fully informed of events and issues. Nancy Brown.
Journalism doesn't have to be this high and lofty profession that is just for a privileged few. It actually can be belong to all of us. And you, as just a person, can go out and get information and share it with others and be part of this thing we call media. It's not this black box that just issues out the way of the world. It's something that we are all involved in, and it's a collective conversation that we all need to have so that we can make better decisions.
I look at the function people are performing. At the time they were gathering the information, were they doing it with the intention of independently collecting information and providing it in an independent, fact-based way, doing something to it editorially and disseminating it to an audience? If they went down there with the notion of, I'm going to gather this information and I'm going to be independent, I'm not down there to protest, that to me is also a big thing. When they were down there, did they go down there to do a story or did they go down there to protest and carry a camera?
Dan Gilmore, executive director of the Center for Citizen Media, says dissemination of information is both crucial and a threat to the status quo.
The most important thing out of this is, to me, is not who we define as journalists. It's that information that the public, the wider public, needs to see is making its way into the public sphere, even though concerted efforts are being made to prevent that from happening.
Teresa Nelson of the Minnesota ACLU understands the need for credentialing journalists for an event. But who should be identified as press?
You know, it gets more difficult when you have somebody who maybe doesn't have press credentials on them. You know, if they are very, very independent, they're not working with any news outlet whatsoever or an independent blogger or things like that, it gets more difficult to identify them as journalists. But at the same time, you know, was Benjamin Franklin a credentialed journalist? were our founding fathers, you know, did they have that formal connection with a news media outlet? And is that really what they had in mind when they wanted to protect freedom of the press? Or was freedom of the press intended to be a much broader protection for anybody who is reporting and documenting what they believe to be the truth?
Nancy Doyle Brown is troubled by how law enforcement has come to view journalists.
But I think there was a little bit of a arrest first and drop charges later approach, which is just not workable when you're talking about journalists. Number one, because journalists are not, they're just going to work. They don't want to be working under threat of arrest. And also, actually, I think there's a problem with the idea that they're neglecting to or refusing to disperse when the police say to disperse, because I would say that they're not actually part of the assembly. When police say there's an illegal or unlawful assembly, and the journalist did not leave when everybody else was supposed to leave and nobody left, I would say that they're actually observing and documenting the assembly and not part of it. So that's sort of just a question of what is the role of a journalist and are they part of the protest? And I think the police just sort of treat them as if they're part of the protest, which is a problem.
Several journalists avoided arrest by embedding with law enforcement in St. Paul. But this approach limits reporters' access to events and therefore the scope of the stories told.
If the only people who are able to work without threat of detention or arrest are people who embed with the police, that is a significant concern in terms of press freedom. And that's the way, that was the result of what ended up happening. And I don't know that the city of St. Paul planned it that way, but they did go and invite certain journalists that they knew if they wanted to embed with the police. And if they are the only ones that are essentially immune from arrest,
then that means potentially the only journalists you have working, or the only journalists you have working freely, are those that are embedded with the police and that are really covering things from a police perspective.
There may have been outrage about the treatment of people and journalists in St. Paul, but Gilmore reminds us that these practices aren't all that new.
You don't have to look very far back into too many places, including in the South especially, you know, Chicago in 1968, a whole bunch of other places where these kinds of things have been routine and hugely overpowering shows of force against people who couldn't fight back. This is important to be pursuing, but it isn't new. And one of the things that is new is that people can be witnesses for a larger public more easily than they ever could.
Many citizens of St. Paul feel that the September 22nd meeting opened a door for more fruitful discussions between city officials and mainstream and citizen journalists about the importance of media at public events and the wide range of journalists and media makers that record the stories. With increased pressure to militarize law enforcement and undermine efforts to tell any story other than the official version, it's a discussion that should be taking place across the country. We will always need a free press to bear witness to all public events. Bob Steele of the Poynter Institute.
Journalists are watchdogs, and a big part of the watchdog role is to shine the light of scrutiny on officials, those who are conducting an event, those who are responsible for security of an event, those who are enforcing laws. That's part of the watchdog role, and if the event organizers or law enforcement agencies or security officials act illegally, unethically, improperly, unprofessionally, then the journalist should be rigorously shining the light of scrutiny.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to Journalism Under Siege at the RNC with Stevie Converse and Candace Clement of Media Minutes, the weekly radio program dedicated to media and democracy. Special thanks to Democracy Now!, the Glass Bead Collective, Eyewitness Video, The Real News, The Uptake, and St. Paul Pioneer Press for their audio. Media Minutes is a production of Free Press. To listen to Media Minutes, go to freepress.net. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network, thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. This week's producer was Media Minutes from Northampton, Massachusetts. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.